In our new series, World War II's Greatest Battles, we chart five pivotal moments that shaped the course of the conflict with military historian James Holland. New episodes drop every Thursday on the History Extra podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Indeed. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/History Extra. Just go to Indeed.com/History Extra right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
This episode is brought to you by Twizzlers. Long day, late night, feeling a little bored? Twizzlers is the ultimate sidekick for any moment of the day, no matter what kind of day you're having. The perfect level of sweet and a fun excuse to sit back and relax. Unwind with Twizzlers. To buy now, visit Hersheyland.com/Twizzlers.
Welcome to the History Extra podcast. Fascinating historical conversations from the makers of BBC History Magazine. Since it first hit our TV screens back in 2009, Horrible Histories has dramatised Terry Deary and Martin Brown's hugely successful books for an entire generation of children. To mark its 15th anniversary, Matt Elton spoke to three members of the team behind the show that mixes comedy songs with gruesome, stupid deaths and a talking rat.
So we are marking today the 15th anniversary of Horrible Histories, the TV show, and I'm delighted to say that I'm joined by some of the people who are involved in making the series. So before we go any further, would you mind just all introducing yourself?
Hello, I'm Jess Ransom. I am an actor in the show and I also write on it as well. And I have been doing that since series four was my first appearance in it. And then I disappeared in series five and I'm in full on since series six.
Hello, I'm Richard Bradley and I run Lion Television, the production company that makes Horrible Histories. I'm one of the executive producers on the show and I have been in from the very beginning on this marvellous ride.
Hello, I'm Ben Ward. I am the head writer and I've been in probably a couple of days less than Richard.
Thank you all so much for being here. This is a huge successful show. It's a phenomenon. It's been going. It's now in its 10th series, I think I'm right in saying. We're going to get into some of the many, many sketches that you've done over that time. Before we do, I wanted to get into a little bit how the show came into being. Can you talk us through where it came from, what its genesis was, I suppose?
I think I'd probably better answer that one. I remember a bedside chat with my son, who is now 26, so that tells you how long ago it was, who absolutely loved Terry Deary's and Martin Brown's books, the Horrible Histories books. And he said, "Dad, you make all this history on telly. Why don't you do Horrible Histories as a TV show?" And the light bulb moment happened, and I thought, oh, that's a great idea. And then the process started. We went and we contacted Scholastic, who produced the books, 22 million copies or something, so probably in many of the homes of Britain, and we got the rights to make it. And then we then had to work out how to do it, and that was huge and exciting challenge. But we had some fantastic allies on that, and Dominic Brigstocke and Caroline Norris came on board. We worked out we wanted to do something along the lines of a sketch show, sort of Blackadder, Monty Python-esque for kids, and we wanted to make the best show about history that had ever been made for kids. And that was it. And it's about 15, well, it's more than 15 years ago now, probably 17 years ago now.
Ben, did you want to add anything to that?
I think Richard doesn't necessarily give himself enough credit. People had tried to make it before or tried, you know, there'd been a lot of talk. I was approached in 1998, to see whether I thought it would make a Radio 4 series. And I didn't have Richard's vision.
I just say the great thing about it is that Terry Deary had done so much heavy lifting in terms of the tone. There's something about it, the sort of anti-authoritarian. I think the three things are: it got to be historically accurate, horrible, and funny. And those three have been the sort of guiding principles of the whole show. And so we were very lucky that that tone was established so that we could then use that to kick on. And the idea of doing a sketch show, and then the idea, so something that British audiences were familiar with and loved, but also then taking that tone and making it something that kids would absolutely love and then have as their own. I think that was the thing that sort of, it was theirs. They could then bring their parents into it. It was a sort of, that was really exciting to see. And it's been amazing to see it take off.
Jess, you mentioned that you both act and write the show. Those guiding principles of being horrible, historically accurate and funny, how hard is it to balance those three principles?
Well, I think all of the funny starts in the research, and we have an amazing research team on the show who find all the information that they could possibly have access to, these little nuggets of interesting, quirky, funny facts about what beauty regimes were in Egyptian times, or what things people used to eat, and recipes, and just family dynamics and silly things like that. So at the core of everything are these historical truths, because it has to be true, it has to be factual, that allow us to embellish and to kind of find the funny and just exploit it for all it's worth. And the character comes from that, and the kind of, like, it's all there for us and we never run out of it. And you sit in these amazing writing rooms where we basically get given a really fun lesson in whatever particular theme it is we're doing, whether it be sport or Christmas or like rivalries or relationships. We did an episode that was all about the history of the NHS, but obviously it had to go back further than that to know how it was established in the first place. So we get the kind of the historical facts, and then they're a springboard for us, and then we get to just kind of use those as a jumping off point for writing and for the performances as well. Because if you know there's a particular dynamic between two people, you just push that as far as you possibly can.
Ben, can you give us some more insights into the writing process? Because it sounds like a hugely fun, collaborative thing to be doing.
I have to say, it's also, I think, the hardest thing I've come across. I mean, I think Jess and I have been doing it long enough now that, you know, we kind of have a bit of a shorthand in writing it. But it's a very difficult, because a lot of it's counterintuitive, that normally when you're writing comedy, you're sort of extrapolating. You might start with a funny idea and then you kind of take it to its, you know, ridiculous conclusions, or you kind of riff on that theme. But that almost immediately, from our point of view, if you start with a historical fact and then start going off into extremes, then you're going off into untruth. So we have to have this strange thing where the thing that you take away needs to be true, which means that most of your kind of funniest punchlines you can't really do, because they leave a false impression. So it creates this really difficult but kind of fun challenge where you have to sort of make historical facts punchlines, because people remember the punchline. So if they remember a funny thing rather than the fact, they're going to remember the wrong thing. One of my favorite things in the meetings is that while, as the writers, you know, we're not historians, we do watch a lot of telly and films. And so there's a lot of things that we've learned that aren't true or that we think we know. So you'll get quite a lot of time. You'll get some writer kind of going, "Oh, and I heard," and you see the faces of the historians sink. And so they go, yeah, you've been watching telly again, haven't you?
These meetings are the best history lessons you never had, though, because we have a team of PhDs and postdoc historians who create these kind of punchy bullet points, and then the comedy writers sit there and respond to that. So it's a kind of, they are absolutely great and entertaining. Come up with incredible, like we're trying to do, you know, I don't know, Victorian child labour, and then someone says, you know, what if we go on Dragon's Den and we've invented a new cleaning method for cleaning the chimneys, a little boy.
This episode is brought to you by Indeed. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/History Extra. Just go to Indeed.com/History Extra right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
This episode is brought to you by Twizzlers. Long day, late night, feeling a little bored. Twizzlers is the ultimate sidekick for any moment of the day, no matter what kind of day you're having. The perfect level of sweet and a fun excuse to sit back and relax. Unwind with Twizzlers. To buy now, visit Hersheyland.com/Twizzlers.
I mean, this fairly uniquely is a show with a talking rat and sewage, but also stories about child labour and quite involved discussions of the Civil War, for instance. How difficult is it to strike a tone between these quite clashing historical trends and currents?
We started off and we were going kind of what's the funny stuff about, you know, from history. And as we've gone, we got more and more ambitious. Actually, I remember when we did the origins of the First World War very early on and thinking, God, that's something everybody wants to try and understand. And it's insanely complex and so on. And then to be able to do it as a sort of, to do it as a successful sketch. Then we're emboldened by each time we take on something that's nuttier and chewier, then we're emboldened. But one of the great things is we've got the rat, and the rat then can tell us whether it's true or not. The rat has become the in-house historian, just letting the audience know what's silly, what's absolutely silly, and what's factually accurate.
The Civil War is a good example of one of the trickier subjects, because it's not that there is some funny stuff in there, but there's also, unfortunately, key figures in it, like Oliver Cromwell, who, as we've desperately tried to find, isn't that funny. And so in the early days, I think we'd probably try and avoid, like, the best example is probably the Industrial Revolution, which just is a bit bleak. There are funny bits in it, but the principle of it is essentially mass labor, people going from, you know, living in squalor and awful things happen. So as Richard said, in the early days, I think we kind of went for the fun kind of Romans, Vikings. But as we've gone on, it's sort of become a challenge now that you kind of look at these things that we have to cover. And then they're actually, as the writers, I think they're the bits we sort of enjoy the most.
And what are some of the most fun characters to play?
I always like the ones that have the most comfortable costumes is my... I'd always rather not be in a corset. I play Queen Victoria in the show, and that's fun because she's cross and she's got strong opinions about things and she knows how she feels about stuff. But then also you can find complete gems in how do I make this non-speaking maid very funny. So you're constantly mining for tiny clues in the scripts or in what you know about the historical figure for ways to play it. And also, across a series, I might play 100 different characters and I've got to try and find a way of making them all different.
My favourite character that Jess plays is Mary Queen of Scots, because she plays them as a sort of binary language. She's just from hardcore Glaswegian on a Saturday night out to sophisticated French lady, and she flips depending on her mood. That's probably my favourite.
And are there characters that you think you perhaps wouldn't tackle?
You know, we obviously think really hard about taste and appropriateness. Comedy is not the best vehicle for doing all periods of history, and there are areas that we don't think it is appropriate, but we don't rule things out. I mean, I think one of the surprisingly funniest sketches we've done recently was Joseph Stalin. And again, you're talking about difficult things to do, but it's Joseph Stalin's photo chop, where he essentially is showing you how to remove people from the photographs that he's eradicated in the purges. And it's quite grown-up stuff, but it's really relevant and it's very funny. And it echoes a lot of what's been going on, you know, in terms of media manipulation, fears about AI, fears about pictures. So, but that's Joseph Stalin doing that. And it's very funny, and I think kids will absolutely get it. So I don't think we don't make hard and fast rules, but we don't want to offend, and we don't think that all areas are equally appropriate for the comedy treatment?
It's a children's comedy program. So some stuff is just more difficult to make funny. Some stuff you don't want to make funny, but we need to cover anyway. So within the writer's room, we'll go, look, we should try and cover this, and we'll try and find ways of doing it. But if we can't find a way that feels like a Horrible History sketch and is still respectful to the material, we probably wouldn't do it. I remember me and Howard Reed, who's another one of the writers, batted around for a long time, was Thomas Jefferson owning slaves. It was a very difficult and a slightly contentious issue, but not something that we wanted to veer away from. And so we ended up with a sketch that, you know, made all the points, was funny, but not in a, you know, poking fun at the issues. And it was about him writing a proclamation about all people, the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, but not for everyone, because his servants were there kind of giving him tea and stuff and listening, go, oh, great, so can we leave? And so, oh, well, sorry, I didn't mean you. So, you know, that was a really tricky, we spent a long time thinking about that and might not have covered it because it's a comedy program. It's difficult to know what to cover.
There was some criticism online of some of the early seasons of the show about the depiction of ancient Egyptians and Aztecs. Do you think that speaks to a changing taste in comedy, a changing sort of sense of cultural values? And are there decisions that you'd make, I suppose, creatively with a show now that you'd make differently from 15 years ago?
I think that's true. And I think we've all become increasingly aware of representation and rights to tell stories and also how we depict certain periods and people. So I think that has changed and it's developed, you know, developed apace. Every week now, these stories are front of mind in the news. So I think it's fair to say that everyone's become more conscious of it. I think we have a very broad ensemble. If the sketch is specifically about an issue of race or ethnicity, then we obviously cast accordingly. But more broadly, we are much more relaxed about who plays what characters, because in the end, it's a comedy show. And if the joke is not about issues around identity, then it's much more freeing. And I think our kids can make that, you know, our audience can tell the difference. So I think, you know, what's reflected in the series is a journey we've all been on. But I think, you know, we didn't want to be limited. One of the kind of great ambitions of this series is to tell global stories, global histories, the histories of all the children in that are represented who'll be watching it. And so we've thought really hard about how we can do that. And so we can tell histories, South Asian stories, how we can tell South African history, history of the Caribbean. So, yeah. It's a sort of, you know, we've worked really hard on that and we, you know, it's fair to say, have gone on a journey, if you like. But I think our audience understands that we're telling the stories from the best intentions.
Yeah, I would add just that, you know, somebody who's been, I think, in every writer's room and been there since the beginning, the show's heart has always been in the right place and is always in the right place. And probably in those early years, in our desperation to make sure that we were covering bits of history that have been neglected from different parts of the world and different cultures, you know, the priority was to make sure that that was covered. And probably in some of the casting at the time, you know, it felt like the priority was to make sure it was covered, and we'd probably do it differently here. Is that fair?
I think the overriding thing on the project, we're really excited that, you know, young kids will kind of, a parent said to me, oh my goodness, my kid came in and started talking about Wu Zetian, a Tang Dynasty Chinese empress. And I had no idea who she was. And she said, oh, she'd seen it on Horrible Histories. And the fact that we can bring Tang Dynasty history or Qin Shi Huangdi, the first emperor of China, or recently doing a wonderful sketch that seemed to hit the air about Shaka Zulu and his mother's death in 1827 and what happened thereafter, that sort of, the ability to bring those stories to the audiences is, we think, fantastic.
Richard, you mentioned they're hearing stories of the impact that the series has on children. Are there particular subjects or topics or characters that you feel have changed how people see them?
I suspect single-handedly, the King Who Brought Back Partying, which is the Eminem rap, it conducted in the banqueting hall at Hampton Court has transformed the interest in Charles II as a historical character, and maybe even the Four Georges as a boy band has kind of a sort of shone a light on the Georgians. But I think overall the impact has been amazing. We, you know, at the beginning the thought was this was something you'd watch when you got back from school, and it would be your sort of secret treat after school. But now, of course, we know that kids are watching it in schools and across the country. And then we've had this incredible feedback from people who've ended up doing studying history because of the show. You know, there are probably thousands now who've been turned on to history, inspired to study history by the show. And we had a university admissions tutor say, you've got to come and talk to our students, because almost every single one of them put their sort of first watching Horrible Histories as the moment they got inspired to study history on their application forms, their personal statements for university. So that does give a huge amount of pride to the entire team, because actually, you know, it's rare in television. You know, television can be life-changing, but to actually sort of excite a generation about a subject is a really special thing.
And in July of this year, we did this amazing prom at the Royal Albert Hall, which was all about the history of opera. And I think Ben and Richard will agree that we were all quite intimidated by the prospect of combining classical opera with the kind of irreverence of Horrible Histories and proper opera singers with us hooning about trying our very best. And to see two sold out audiences of kids completely enthralled by proper opera singers giving Don Giovanni full beans, with us kind of punctuating it with our telling of how these operas came to be, was absolutely amazing. And that was a kind of massive collaboration between us and the ENO and Birmingham Stage, and Terry Deary was there. And it was just an amazing thing to kind of go, okay, we can use this thing, this Horrible Histories thing, to kind of introduce new art forms to these children. So it's not necessarily just about giving them the facts, but also about going, have you heard something like this before? Well, here you go. So that was an incredible thing. That's like one of my best days ever.
Richie Webb, who has written all the songs from the very beginning, deserves a huge shout out, because a combination of amazing lyrics penned by writers, but also his music, has taken historical learning to a new place.
I wanted to ask about the songs. How do you go about deciding what style of song matches what style of historical character?
So it's not dissimilar to the rest of the process, to be honest, at its inception stage. Where what happens is we go through these packs of research, so sort of 20 pages of interesting facts. So when writers come back and pitch ideas for sketches, they also pitch ideas for songs. And so we'll look at all the songs and look at all the sketches and things that are covered. And often there's things that make more sense to do as a song than they do as sketches. But once we've got the idea, so the ideas people pitch usually come with, oh, we'll do Rihanna, or we'll do, you know, the Beatles, which Richie's always very happy with. So we'll normally get these kind of lots of ideas. And then you look at what we've done before, what fits best with what we're doing. Also within a series, we'll try and kind of balance out a certain number of kind of fast songs, ballads, parodies. So we have a sort of overarching view of what's within a series. But mostly it's just what's exciting, you know. Very often it's just a song that we've not done before that we go, oh, that'll be a lot of fun.
Certain subjects suggest a genre. I think when we started out, we were pretty Catholic in our tastes, and, you know, we did everything from, we had Simon and Garfunkel doing the Viking song, and I'm not sure that many of our young audience would have a clue who Simon and Garfunkel were at that point, but Matt and Jim did an amazing job and it was hilariously funny. But I think we've moved to more contemporary musical references now. But they are incredibly, they're great vehicles for comedy, but they're also, they last, they're shareable. It's amazing. They get millions and millions of shares online, and then people do their own versions, and it's wonderful. And you know you've arrived when Cambridge University rings you up and says, can we quote a line from a Horrible History song in our history examinations for our history students? I think it was, I'm a knight, my only aim in life is to fight. became a question for, if it's a line from one of the songs, became a question in the Cambridge history examinations for students. So
what was the question?
How much is that an accurate representation of the medieval knight?
My final question, but as I mentioned at the start, it's been going strong for 10 seasons. How do you feel it's changed over that time? And what do you think the future holds in terms of the direction it might take?
When you create, involved in creating a series, you never think it's going to last. You know, you hope to get to the end of the first series, let alone be sort of there 15 years later working on the 10th series. But I think inevitably it's changed and we've got more ambitious, I think. The small ensemble has grown into a sort of, into a bigger group, allowing us to take on more areas of history, represent, you know, more women's history, more history of disability, more history. You know, we did a Black British History episode, which was really successful. I mean, I'm very excited about it. History doesn't stop. We have a new audience every few years as children grow up. So I'm excited by it. I think it's never been more important. You look at the world today, it is riven with issues that are about contested history. So the study of history, I feel really sort of passionate about, whether that's in the Middle East or in Eastern Europe or wherever. So I think history is more important than ever. And so I think the show is as important as ever. And we're not going to run out of history or ways of interpreting. And one of the great things is that as the cultural references change, you know, TV parodies and so on, we can change with it. So we've reflected historical Love Island and First Dates, but we're now doing TikTok-inspired sketches and so on. So our means to kind of tell historical stories is evolving as well.
I think that what is clear from the amazing work that was done at the beginning, the groundwork with the series, firstly with Terry's books, and then Richard and Ben having been here from the beginning, the amazing directors and producers and cast that established what is Horrible Histories on TV, that clearly was a winning formula. And our kind of job now is to keep it consistent and keep it relevant. What's wonderful is we're never going to run out of history, so the source material is always going to be there. What's really fun now is that because the shows tend to be themed, it gives us a really excellent starting point for our episodes, and we're always finding new ways to kind of tell the stories, and there'll be new trends, there'll be new TV shows, there'll be new things to parody, there'll be new celebrities for us to kind of equate with historical figures. It's hard to keep generating it, but there's so much for us to use that it's a real privilege to kind of be able to try and keep this high standard and to keep people like hungry for, you know, the facts and the way that we deliver them.
I would say that just in practical terms, in the evolution of the show, there was one meeting at the end of series one that was probably formed what the show became, because series one is very different if you watch series one. And then we had a big round table meeting at the end of series one before series two, going, okay, well, some of that worked. You know, there was a very sort of analytical kind of, well, let's do more of that bit that works and less of that bit that didn't work. And then the format of the show really formed after that meeting. And then there was another round, series six and seven. Up to series six and seven, we were covering several different subjects in each show, and so it was much more cherry picking facts. And then because we started to do specials after series six and seven, it meant that you could get into much more detail, which all, you know, thanks to amazing researchers, it opened up lots of parts of history that we hadn't been able to cover. But I have every research pack from every meeting we've ever done, and the stack's about this high. It's almost as tall as me. And every research pack we get, even if it's about a subject that we might have covered before, carries new and interesting things in. So, you know, as long as the facts keep coming, I think we're all good.
And I'd also say, as long as we can keep raising the bar in terms of the production and keep surprising ourselves and keep bringing joy to a young audience that is, you know, where it's in short supply. We've talked about the researchers and the writers' room, but actually the team that then, when we move into production, what an amazing team it is. But also, it's a point of great pride, I know, that you look around the whole world of children's live action programming and comedy anywhere in the world, and I don't think there's better sort of costume, makeup, art department. They work so hard and they are so demanding of themselves, and they have to do an insane amount of putting bald caps on, yes, and then suddenly putting prosthetics onto Jess so she looks 80 years old, Queen Victoria in her latter years, and then warts on Oliver Cromwell's face. They have to do that dozens of times a day in costume and makeup. Costumer have got wardrobes full, and they're almost running to sort of get the costumes onto the actors. So amazing. And the art department, we were wanted to do the Trojan horse sketch in the last series, and they sort of looked thoughtful, and then came back 2 days later. There was a Trojan horse that they knocked up in the props department that you could get inside.
And that you can be in the studio in the morning and you're sitting in a First World War trench, and then by the afternoon it is like a Roman villa, and they've just repainted it all and got different props in and completely redesigned the space. Like, it's such a big team effort to make a quality product at the end.
And I'm going to do one last thing as well, and I'm going to sort of shout out for the BBC, because I do think, and I've often said this, I don't think any other organisation in the world would have backed a show like this. So to see BBC, they've been consistent supporters of it, but it is a rare thing. Most other broadcasters, street platforms don't care about the idea of taking history or taking something factually accurate to a young audience, but they do, and they've been fantastic backers of it.
That was the team behind Horrible Histories. The 15th birthday episode of Horrible Histories will air on CBBC and BBC iPlayer on the 16th of April. Thanks for listening. This podcast was produced by Jack Bateman.